For the summertime is coming.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast, Season 6, Episode 145. Let's start another Design Studio conversation about presentation design and the business of presentation. Here are the show hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Will you go, lassie, go, and we'll all...
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey, where it is 62 degrees in February.
Okay, we got to talk about what's happening because, you know, Nolan, you gave the little weather update. I should have given a weather update because we actually have weather here in Southern California.
It's going to be a weather podcast today because we're.
I'll start off with the good stuff. I am happy, like ecstatic with the number of presentation projects. Okay, maybe I'm a little under happy because there's so many of them, but I'm so happy there are many of them. It's a good time right now. In addition, as a company, we just listed our second staff position addition this year. So I'm busy reading through resumes and portfolios. And
now are these replacements or new positions?
New positions.
So you're just adding to
we're adding. Yeah. Headcount. Yeah. We're finally past the COVID. Can we make it all work? And we're into the portion where companies are busy again. I think.
Great.
I'm going to assume everybody listening is feeling the same thing. Suddenly it's like everybody needs to make up lost time and things are just coming out of the, you know, out of the walls. Every email is a new project. Okay, wait. Back to weather. And this week, enjoying. And I'm going to say yes, enjoying, because, you know, normally I've been inside at the computer anyway, so I don't really care. But here in Southern California, it is raining, so we actually have weather here. And I will say the irony is, Nolan and Sandy, is that January, February, March, they're the most beautiful times to be in Southern California because, one, the weather never really changes that much, but all the hills turn green and lush. Mm. And it's an amazing time in Southern California versus, I would say, Sandy had a guess, snow outside.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll touch a little bit on that weather.
Yeah. So versus the beautiful, you know, Midwest snow, we don't have beautiful. We get actually green hills. And Nolan, I'm going to guess versus the, well, actually you said 62. I was going to say the dead freezing cold Northeast,
no, it's beautiful.
62 is like springtime. It is. Anyways, okay, there's my update and what's happening.
Yeah. So thanks for the weather update. I'm going to give you the traffic. Yeah, so it's beautiful here. Everyone talks about the weather, but nobody ever does anything about it. So we've had a lot of projects coming in too, but I've been turning down a lot just because I was talking to Sandy about this earlier. They just don't feel right. A lot of them are new clients, or potential new clients, you know, wanting to start right away and jump in. And can you turn this right around? And if you don't have, I don't know, when you're a smaller agency, and you don't have, you know, relationships in place, you know. When somebody says sort of like jump, you don't immediately just say how high, because you don't, you know, putting a lot of, you know, dropping everything to do something for somebody you don't have a relationship is not always the best solution.
Speaking of relationship, Nolan, do you have that person on your side that'll throw a book at you, like happened yesterday when you say yes,
throw a book at you because you accepted something you shouldn't have?
She's like, I put you on the call to say no, and you said yes.
Oh. Yeah, I don't have the bandwidth to do a lot of that stuff, but I started working with a new freelancer who we'll see, you know. Yay. So far she's pretty good. Designer first, presentation designer second, which is always the best. Mm-hmm. And I just wrote an article for Creative Pro on Cameo, which we talked about last time. So that'll be coming out probably this week. But I've been playing with Cameo. So it's interesting, you know, sort of seeing the limitations, but also what you can do with it. You can't do, we talked about, like, there's no green screening on it, but I've been playing with having Cameo be the full back, you know, fill the slide completely, and then putting content on top of me, which you can do. So, so yeah, we're kind of able to maybe do that Prezi kind of thing if you just put yourself off to the side. Anyway, so that's what's happening here. Sandy, what's going on with you?
Well, okay. So I haven't been turning down any projects. I am plenty busy. Wait, how should I say? I have to say that differently. I have a lot of projects in the pipeline and that are swirling around out there, but for some reason, so many of them are I'm not getting my clients to respond to needs, to approve a draft so we can move forward with the second draft. And then from there, we're supposed to sprout another project. And it's just frustrating. I feel like I'm kind of on hold.
You're getting ghosted by your clients?
Yes, that sounds so permanent.
Wait, are they actual projects in process or are they proposals for projects?
No. They're projects in process with deadlines. You know, so that's the tough part.
And the reason I ask is one of the invoices sent last week was here's an invoice for all the concepting work on a template. We're just invoicing it because we haven't heard from you. So therefore, we're ready to pick it up again. But please pay this amount. Mm-hmm. We're calling this done because we've been ignored for too long on that one.
And I will not stand for it.
Well, no. It's just like we're moving it off our books. And I'm wondering if that's where you're at. It's just people are crazy busy. They're literally making up lost time. Okay. So, yeah, sorry.
Exactly. And I have to report on the snow. I mean, I'm serious. It is 5 degrees here. It's beautifully sunny outside right now. But I have to go out and not plow. I'm going to shovel the inch that remains. I hired someone last night to Jeff is out of town, so I had to hire someone to plow the 7 inches of snow that we had. Like I said, it's beautiful. So that is my weather report, my work report. How about we move on?
let's get into it.
Well, do we have any news? I'm just going to say I really don't have anything to contribute to presentation world news.
I don't think I have anything.
I think this is newsworthy. Announced on February 15, Jamie Garoch announced that once you do another update of BrightSlide, the newest installer, you don't have to do that anymore. They're going to be automatically updated. Okay. Now, I'm trying to think. We don't have
without an installer. They're just self-installing type little things.
Exactly. It's the last time you need to download the BrightSlide installer to update the free PowerPoint add-in for Windows PCs. I didn't hear anything for Mac.
I'll have to look into that. We actually have auto updates turned off, so we always control when a computer does updates because we never want anything mission critical or we don't want anything to happen.
That's a cool coding addition.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we should just move on to our topic because we've got a guest hanging out in the wings, and let's move. An introduction is an opportunity to grab the listener's attention and make them care about the information about to be delivered. The recommendation is 2.7 seconds to 15 seconds in duration, and the timer is ticking away here, so here is my deliberate, carefully chosen, well-rehearsed introduction to episode 145 of the Presentation Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that is all from page 73 of Before the Mic. Glenn Gibson is an author, fantastic person, and an amazing accent to those of us based in the U.S. He also has an equally amazing approach to presentation design and presentation messaging. And myself, Nolan, Sandy, and everyone listening gets to hear his witty insights on how to compose meaningful, memorable, and motivational presentations starting now. Glenn Gibson, welcome. And just before you even say one word, see, I know this is going to come out. You are based in Ohio, correct?
That is correct, yes.
Now, I know several people listening just said, that's not an Ohio accent. Let us know the quick version of why you sound so eloquent and how you came into the world of presentation.
Well, that is a great question. I was born and raised in Scotland, and I find myself now living in Ohio. The very short version of this story as to why I am here is because I met my beautiful wife while she was backpacking in Scotland over 20 years ago, and we had a legitimate long-distance relationship before FaceTime and all the technology. It was mixtapes, it was letters, it was expensive phone calls for 4 years, and then we got married. She moved to Scotland with me, and then we moved back over here in 2005.
That's awesome. It's a great story.
And how did you come to the world of presentation?
So through all that, great question. Well, I think I just love to talk. I don't know if it's a cultural being Scottish, but yeah, I've had the opportunity to talk on all sorts of topics at work through my career. And early on, I realized that this isn't just a part of a job. This is my job, is to be a compelling communicator. And that was while I was in tech support in Scotland. That was while I was doing health and safety training. And then I've, for the last 17 years living over here in Ohio, I've worked for a very large software, or now a large software company. And as their, one of their evangelists, their lead global technology evangelist is my most recent role there. And then really been, had the opportunity to get in front of people talking about complicated topics for years and years and years, and just loving it, loving every second of it.
Just look at you, everybody, listeners. Just look at him. You can, can't you feel the vibrance in his voice? We certainly can see it. It's awesome.
Glenn, so thanks thanks for coming. And I think Troy mentioned the first time we met you was at Presentation Summit.
Yes.
Where were we last time? Florida. That's where we were. So we were all thrilled to meet you. And I have to say, you sold out of your book, which we're going to talk about. You didn't have a copy by the time I got to you. So the first thing I did when I got home was order a copy. And it's called Before the Mic. And I recommend everyone start with the last few pages about the author because it's inspirational. But tell us about when it was written, and when it was published, and sort of the impetus for it, and sort of, I always like to ask people like their elevator pitch on the book. Like, how do you position the book? How do you, you know, tell people about it?
Yeah, well, lots to talk about in there. So it started off as a twinkle in my eye, this book, I would say. Years ago, I started just jotting down thoughts, expressions, experiences, things that were wonderful that I watched people do as presenters, and then complete train wrecks as well. And then over time, just had this big kind of body of work and ideas to pull from. The biggest push for writing the book. So then it galvanized into an idea. In 2019, I took a sabbatical from my employer, from my work, and my wife booked me a cabin for a writing retreat in Pennsylvania and sent me off. Now, I don't know if she did it to do me a favor or to just get rid of me for a while, but it worked either way. And in there, I had lots of long nights. It was like a vortex of time, log fires. It's quite romantic, just basically, you know, by myself, as romantic as that can be. Just in a really crushed out the structure of the book, and the whole kind of idea galvanized. The idea of writing presentations, the writing process, was going to be the first few chapters of my book. And as I got into it, I realized I was tapping into an often unexplored part of presentations, which is, how do you compose something that sounds good before it looks good? And that, what started off as a few chapters, I realized that was really going to be what the whole book was about. So that's why it's called Before the Mic, because it is focused on everything you need to do before you actually present, up until that moment of picking up.
And it's, I mean, people ask all the time for that kind of stuff, but it is, would you acknowledge it's not always maybe the most fun part or the easiest part? It's a little painful before you get to start playing with pixels and images and things. It's like outlining your high school, you know, term paper. That was always, I always say, like, that was the painful part, but it worked, right?
I would say yes. It seems like it would be the most painful part. And it is a hard concept. When I work with clients and with people on their presentations, and we've not touched a slide for hours, they get itchy and antsy because the slides are the visible manifestation of progress. And we'll be hours deep into constructing a wonderful outline. And I can tell that they're thinking, we're nowhere near ready, but we are by the time we're done with the outline and kind of really organized our thoughts, the slides come together quite quickly. So on paper, it seems like it's not the fun part. And I don't know if there's something wrong with me, but I love it. I love being presented with this big dump of unorganized information and then making sense of it, figuring out what we're trying to accomplish, and then coming up with ideas and being super creative. So I get so much energy for doing that.
So what I'm hearing is Glenn would do this or be one of those home organizer people, you know, the person that comes in and organizes somebody else's mess.
You know, it's funny you say that because I've thought about that. And my it's fun. If you said it to my wife, she would roll her eyes and be like, there's no way. Cause she is the tidy organizer person. She's a machine. However, when it comes to, and I use this as an analogy in my book too, when it comes to like reorganizing the fridge or our big cupboards and pantries, the idea of spilling everything out and just making sense of it, I take on those projects on purpose. I love it. So I think there's something in there about here's all this stuff, can't find anything, let's make sense of it. And I call that as actually a step in the writing process, the empty the pantry phase, which is get everything on the table, no judgment, just dump it all out and see what you've got. And then it's the same thing. And I expand on that whole, it's the same phenomena. You see what there is, you find old stuff, you see that there's stuff you thought you had that isn't there. And then you kind of work from there.
Listen, let's talk. I mean, I totally am in love with that because that's what I do in real life. I'm an organizer in real life and in my business. But I want to talk more about the compose component of your book. Your tagline, the subtitle is How to Compose Meaningful, Memorable, and Motivational Presentations. That word compose is a lot more than just a good phrase. There's a lot of analogies that spawn off of that. So do you have a musical background?
Yes. I'm a drummer, so I don't know if that qualifies as being an actual musician because, but I am a drummer but I also know enough about playing a few chords on the guitar and have the desire to sing more so than the wonderful, voice quality to sing, but I like doing it. So yes, I write songs. I play with my, play some music with my children and play in bands whenever I can. So the word compose, you're absolutely right, was picked deliberately and on purpose because there is, and this, the whole analogy in this book is I believe there is such a correlation between the art and science of presentation writing with how songwriters approach their craft.
Wow.
Because songwriters write things that sound great, and then they worry about the performance and the visuals that go along with it. So that whole idea about creating value in our presentations, making sure that even if there was no slides, are we able to deliver value and inspire the audience? And that's what songwriters are wonderful at doing. And there are so many pieces from that whole kind of analogy that we can unpack and talk about.
Well, as somebody who loves music and always has, but has zero talent in it, and you can't read music, can't understand, you know, how somebody could actually pick a guitar up and play something. I did really enjoy the sort of focused nature, sort of straightforward nature of the book, and that musical analogy through it, because you carry that musical theme throughout, which is just so nice with you. And you stayed up front, as Andy said, like composing a presentation. Me equals composing a song, essentially. And we're going to get into sort of all that because I know, you always hear those stories about, you know, Paul McCartney wrote Yesterday in, 2 minutes, or, you know, the opening to Oklahoma was written, is in the time it takes to, to sing it. And that's the exception, I think, for the most part, right? Composing a song takes work, composing a presentation does. But so let's talk about the book sort of structurally. There are three sections. The first one is theory. The second, which and you know, anybody in music knows there's music theory. Then there's structure. Of course, songs have structures too. And then the last is the writing process. So that's, you know, methods for delivering, you know, melodies and lyrics, for example. So you really carry that through, like just as somebody would sit down and logically write a song. That's how you take people, you know, through this. So we're gonna go through those three sections, I think, to talk about. Sandra, you want to take sort of presentation/song theory? Because, and I guess we should probably define music theory too. Like, what, we always hear that term, but if you're not a musician, what does that mean?
Well, let's start with that. Let's define, music theory.
Yeah. So I think the first thing to acknowledge is the word theory sounds totally boring. Like, the idea of sitting learning principles and concepts before you can start writing something, because sometimes you just want to go and, you know, see the end result, but it's so important. But these ideas, and this is what I say to people with this analogy, is whether you've written a song before or not doesn't mean that you don't know what I'm using a lot of double negatives here, but even if you've never written a song, you know what you like to hear because you have music favorites and things that you like. And if you were going to write a song, even if you're not an expert, it is very likely that you would write music in a genre that you enjoy hearing yourself, and you would kind of gravitate towards that. So if you like kind of acoustic-y based kind of music, you would probably start there. If you're into electronic and dance music, you kind of start there. So the point is, we hear presentations all the time. And one of the things for presenters is paying attention to the things that you like to hear, and then the things that you don't particularly care for is a great place to start. So this idea of theory and just understanding. So that's the kind of the correlation back to music. And then into the book, it really kind of expands upon some of the tried and true principles of presentation writing. There's
exactly.
One.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, keep going. Yeah, please.
I was going to say, there's one quote from an American singer-songwriter called Joe Stafford, which I actually found after I published my book. And as we all know, as soon as something goes to print, you have all these other wonderful ideas and you wish they were in there. But this quote was, "Songwriting is an art unto itself, not to be confused with performing." And that quote, I think, creates a seismic shift in people's thinking as a presenter, because what we realize is our comfort level in front of an audience, some people are very comfortable and rely on that, and others are very nervous. And then that kind of feels perhaps that holds them back from being impactful and successful. But once we realize that the ability to write and the ability to perform are two different skill sets, it allows us to focus on learning what it takes to write something of value and focusing on that skill set. So I like to say that very confident presenters should pay attention to this, because then this helps them add value to their material. And then people who are very nervous, it can increase their confidence kind of at the root level, because they're able to approach the microphone with confidence in what they've written, more so than perhaps their natural kind of delivery flair.
And one of the things I love is in this section one, the presentation theory, is your three M's.
Yes.
The meaningful, memorable, motivational, right? Did I get those three?
You did. You hit them.
They're fantastic, and I think they create a great alliteration to the whole concept, and they really help guide it. Where did you come up with those, or what do you have to say about the three M's?
Yeah, well, I think these are the hallmarks for what make any presentation differentiating and captivating. And I talk to some people and I say this, your presentation should be meaningful to the audience. They should be memorable, with a few key ideas that people will remember in the hours, days, and weeks following, and accomplish something, be motivational. And some people push back and say, that's too fluffy. I deliver serious corporate presentations. I'm briefing industry analysts. I'm talking to the board. I'm doing financial updates. And I push back a little bit and say, okay, let's look at the opposite of those three words. The opposite of meaningful is obviously meaningless. The opposite of memorable is, you know, obviously forgettable. And then the opposite of motivational is maybe like the hard opposite is demotivating. Not all presentations go into the demotivating land, but the best case, they're often uninspiring. So I say to people, if that's what you want, then yes, there's no value in trying to strive for the three M's. But in every circumstance, even a financial update, clearly we have, there's so much that can be gained when the presenter gives some thought to, why does this information matter? Why is it meaningful to the people I'm presenting to? What things do I want them to walk away with and remember from all of this information? And what are they supposed to do with it once they hear it? Because I like to say this a little tongue in cheek. I often say to people, one of the questions in the book is, in order to get to these three M's, is what do you want your audience to do after your presentation? And the most common response to that after a big long pause of silence is, I don't want them to do anything. I just want them to listen. And I'll say to people, if that's your goal, unfortunately, that's what's going to happen. So let's figure out something that we want the audience to do with the information. And I say to people, pick a verb, any verb, and it's better than none.
Give us an example.
So in a sales situation, clearly it's buy something, or, you know, maybe it is you want them to stop looking at other software. If you're a software vendor yourself and you want them to look back at it, the vendor that they already have, there's all sorts of different scenarios. Where I go deeper with this though is, what do you want the audience to do? Not in a month from now or two months or a year from now. What do you want them to do after this presentation? So let's stick with the sales situation. Unless the decision makers are in the room with the checkbook and a pen ready to sign the check, there, in that circumstance, your goal is, I want them to write the check, so to speak. But loads of sales situations, the actual goal of that presentation is to take the next step in the sales process, to have the next meeting, to organize a demo. And once we realize that the goal of this isn't to sell the whole software, but just compel the people in the room enough to say, yes, we will meet and we'll watch the demo in our kind of software sales situation, that is where the beauty happens.
I think that's one of the big thing that I see a lot in training people on structure and storytelling is that I put presentations into two categories, actionable or informational. That's not a word. Actionable or informational. And I tell people, like, in business situations, 99% of your presentations are going to be actionable. Like, even that, you know, oh, I'm just giving them the presentation on the 401k benefits. Yeah, but you want them to choose a present, you know,
yes,
you know, choose one so they make more money in retirement, all that kind of stuff. So I think that's the thing. So many people just see it, oh, no, I'm just giving an informational. And it's not. It's like, what is that action? And it could be a small action.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't have to be, you know, change the world. That was years ago. Everyone was like, every presentation should try to change the world. It's like, I don't know about that. How about just, you know, take a little step? But yeah, that last thing, that call to action is really important. So that's sort of section one, right? The meaningful, memorable, motivational. We still haven't made any slides. We haven't sort of started putting words on paper. But Troy, you want to?
Okay, so section two. Just by the title, you can tell it totally lost me. Section two is song structure. And I'm like, song structure. What is, I don't have rhythm. You're a drummer. I don't have. Okay. Let me start with, obviously I'm not the musical person, but the book has a running thread of music through it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't resonate with me, but the content totally did. And the more I got into it, I am confident I learned something about music as well.
Cool.
A music theory. That being said, the classic strong song structure follows the rule of three. And, you know, I'm just going to say three must obviously be your favorite number because there are three throughout this whole book.
Yep. I think so. And I all good communication theory will give a nod to this phenomena called the rule of three. And, you know, this is the scientifically proven fact that human beings can remember things easier when they're grouped into threes. And a lot of times people will give advice around, you know, a three-part phrase, like stop, drop, and roll, which is a wonderful example, because if there's ever a time you need to recall instructions, it's when you're, you know, on fire. So, exactly. So that's a good example, but there's not often an opportunity in a presentation to coin a three-part phrase that people will remember for decades, like that one. So there's a couple of ways that I suggest practically applying the rule of three. One is structure itself, this idea of introduction, body, and conclusion. Lots of people look at that and then they go like, yeah, that's so obvious. But I say that starting talking does not qualify as an introduction. And stopping talking doesn't qualify as a conclusion. We're talking about a deliberate apportioning of the information up front to accomplish something right at the beginning of the presentation, and then similarly in the conclusion. And then for the structure throughout the presentation, I really kind of get into some more specific examples of that too.
Okay, so I think this is in section two, but I'm going to loop into another number three you had, and I totally agree with it. But when somebody first reads it, they're going to go, there is no way. And then you kind of defend it and organize it and make it like that is the most logical thing I had. And that is that every presentation should only have three agenda items.
Yes.
It's fantastic, because there is no way a presentation only has three points. But then you reorchestrate or you restructure that into an agenda item. It's just a really, really, really good approach. And the way it was set up was really, I really caught on to that. I'm like, I like the way this is worded and outlined.
Excellent.
I agree.
I'm delighted to hear it.
Did you, have you seen Steve Jobs's Stanford commencement speech?
Yes, I have.
I talk about that all the time, because to me, it's the simplest structure, one of the structures I teach, which is called three things. Uh-huh. And the beginning, he comes out, he says, I never graduated college, didn't think I'd ever be here, but I'm going to talk to you today and I'm going to tell you three stories. Story number one. And that's it. I mean, that is his introduction. And then he literally tells three stories.
Yeah.
And to me, that is just like whenever somebody says, oh, well, you know, the pros don't, you know, use this structure. They have, you know, it's all based on Joseph Campbell and this and that. It's like, no. Like, just watch this. Like, just, I'm going to tell you three things.
Yeah. And that is a wonderful way to bring that whole thing to life too, because he doesn't have any slides in that presentation. But the way he structured that content, he was able to keep people going. And then from there, he, as a speaker, was able to organize his thoughts into the three stories, meant the audience knew exactly where he was throughout his whole presentation. They could remember them too. And I've had people kind of over the years, people always say like, I like it, but how to do it is the challenge. So I get into that in my book. I share some of my techniques and some hacks and some ways to get yourself to a three-part agenda. And I will say, I have written thousands of presentations, and I've found myself in this weird, murky world of writing presentations for other people to deliver as well, which is an interesting thing where, you know, it's like all the words that I'm like so passionate about, and then someone else is out there delivering, I'm sitting in the audience. But this idea about boiling it all down, I've never failed to do it. I've helped write executive board presentations, keynotes, analyst briefings, almost every presentation scenario. I've even done, I conducted a funeral for someone one time, and I still used the same principles, boiled this person's life down into kind of three main kind of areas. And for me, it provides a starting place structure for how I'm going to organize. So how do you take someone's life and, you know, honor their kind of life course? It just, for me, rather than it being like a big, long, meandering kind of speech, I was able to kind of distill it down in there.
And you're not, I don't know if we said this up front, you're not a presentation designer, right? You're not a graphic designer.
Correct.
Do you design slides, or you're just the words? You're just the lyrics guy?
Based on the book, I would say he's an artist. That's for certain.
Yeah, I drew all the doodles in the book too, but I can't say that I'm particularly an artist, but I have enough principles in mind. And again, just from observing slide decks that look nice versus slide decks that are terrible, where I have a set of principles that I use to create my own slides. And then, but I also love it working with designers where I can kind of lay out a concept. Here's what I'm thinking. And then it comes back and it's gorgeous.
And what percentage, you obviously design a lot of talks or presentations without slides, right? So like what kind of percentage historically, you know, use slides and those don't? And I think I'm answering this for you. On top of that, there's no difference, right? In terms of structure.
Right, exactly. It's the same process. And sometimes I just wish I could go without the slides because I'm done and I'm ready to go. I've got this great story. I've timed it. It sounds great. And then I've got hours of work ahead of me now to have slides that are going to kind of do that justice as well. But yeah, I mean, they're kind of an expectation. They're such a wonderful medium when used correctly to communicate ideas as well. So I think they are good. I almost say they're necessary in some situations, but not always.
Well, what kind of percentage? Like how often are you working with slides and versus not at all?
Probably about 90% with slides, honestly. Okay. Yeah.
And that's just sort of the the corporate world, right?
Yeah.
That's
if I help someone with a presentation and I deliver back just an outline / script with no slides, then I get some very concerned looks.
That is the expectation of, you know, maybe one thing, oh, I'm hiring Glenn, I'm hiring somebody, this is an important presentation, therefore I need to have slides, you know, versus the, oh, I'm just giving a, you know, an office update that's not, I don't need slides, I'm just going to sort of talk extemporaneously whatever.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of expectation around there for sure. And again, beautiful slides can make the person and the information can beautify the whole experience. So I'm a big fan when they're good.
Do you see a difference in people using slides versus not in terms of comfort level? Like, do you see them as a crutch? Do you see people more successful when they have slides? Is it like related to level? Like, you know, a C-suite can do it without slides and other people need to? I don't know. I'm just...
Yeah, I think it's all about how they're used. And I think one of the things I get into in the book, just part of the writing process, I think one of the biggest challenges, just for your average presenter out there, people who are, this is not their job, they just have to go and speak. One of the biggest challenges is the slide templates that have seeded their way into the world that are just like Mad Libs with text boxes that are asking to be filled with text. And then people put text in them, talk over them, and it's just this perpetuating, that's what people think you're supposed to do. And because everybody does it, it seems to be okay. And I kind of say to people, even just like a presenter who is doing a team update, use that to create your material. But if you just took the step of not projecting these wordy slides, turned the projector off or didn't screen share, and you just talked through all the thoughts that you've had, which are really good, your presentation would be exponentially better because we're not distracted by these wordy slides. We're actually listening to you. So yeah, I think it's a hard problem for the average professional to get over because it seems like that's what you're supposed to do.
So is that what you're referring to as corporate disease?
So kind of, but corporate disease is getting into a very specific slide structure. And this is an outline structure, which I believe, you know, there was a powerful, you know, cabal back in the 80s of boring people that has managed to convince people all around the world that this is what corporate decks should look like. And it's really this idea, we've all been there and seen it. It's a slide deck, which starts with, we were founded in, we have this number of employees, this is where our headquarters are, we have these family values, we have a set of amazing, impressive customers. The analyst communities think we're great because we've got all these accolades, etc. Now,
I'm sorry, I just fell asleep. Is it over?
Are you done? My dentist does that every single time. He tells me about his education, and then then his first job as a dentist, and then he finally gets to my toothache.
I get it. Exactly, right. And it's not that that information is unimportant, because you need to be right. But the fact is, it's focused on the person talking. It's not focused on the people that are listening. And I say to people, if you just did this, take all the stuff about yourself and put it to the end of your presentation and then see what you've got. That's a great place to start.
That's why I loved, Jobs's commencement was there was no intro. There's not, here mm-hmm. I am. I mean, he's had one sentence. Let me get to it. Let me get to your toothache, right?
Yeah,
let me just.
Exactly.
You know, if it's okay, I'd love to spend a minute talking with Nolan and Troy about the processes that they might use for structure. Yeah. I know we've kind of touched on it in past podcasts, but Nolan, tell me about the process, if any, dumb question, that you might follow.
So I resisted sort of teaching or, sort of getting into process for so long because I don't like systems. I don't like processes, even though I sort of do it under the hood. And even though I actually have a degree in media writing, so I've read, dramatic structure. I've read I know that. But I just kept getting asked, like over the years by clients, I got to put this together because I focused on the visuals and the design. So anyway, so I developed or sort of came to the realization, this is what I teach now. Two structures, B3E, which stands for beginning, three things, and end, or just three things, in which you get rid of the beginning and you get rid of the end and you just do a Steve Jobs and you just get right to it. So, this probably doesn't come as a surprise to Glenn. I mean, this is all sort of the same thing. You've got the B3E is a three, part structure. And then the middle is also three things, which you also talk about. Yeah. And that's pretty much, what I do. But I really, to what we were just talking about, I really encourage people to make, if you're going to use a beginning, a middle, and an end, make that beginning and end as short as possible, because nobody cares. Nobody cares about the history. Nobody cares about what you did last month. Nobody cares, especially in a 10-minute presentation. Just get to it. What are you trying to say? That's what I encourage people to do.
How about you, Troy?
I think I read through this section on structure like at least two times, trying to wrap my head around it and make sure I wasn't like yelling at Glenn, because I'm like, no, I don't, because you have this whole start with pencil and paper and don't use PowerPoint. And it finally hit me. I was like, okay, so no, I do not live in the write it down with pencil and paper world. It's just not my workflow, because I'm also not meeting with people directly. But the reason I read it twice is because when I removed the phrases about what medium to use, paper and pen, I completely agree with the process. Big topic first, organize, fill in the details, which is what we do. But we use PowerPoint as our pen and paper, if you will. But it is a white slide with what we call green box notes. There is no way of mistaking this as a slide. It's a center green box. And we put topic, and then we'll start throwing some filler information around it, maybe a picture off to the side, and then that's the process. And I would equate it more to like what Sandy, you've talked about in the past about using the you've got that cool book you had published at one point that was a sticky note sized, and you kind of orchestrated and allowed you to reorganize it, So that's my process. We're a very PowerPoint first, but we're not using PowerPoint as slides. We're using it as the process, as the tool to organize. We still do this. We do a lot of video work where we storyboard out the whole video, and to the point of where, because we can give the PowerPoint slides to somebody to edit. So we'll give them snapshots of the video keyframes, if you will, and we'll put the dialogue that'll be written. I'm thinking more of an explainer video, and they can go in and add notes or whatever, and then they get it back to us so we can orchestrate it before we dive into, After Effects and motion graphics and things like that. So we use PowerPoint as our storyboarding tool all the time. So yes, I totally agree now, Glenn, but I was questioning and almost saying, no, this is wrong. This is wrong. But after I got through it, the process, absolutely. So hopefully that makes sense.
Sandy, what about you?
Well, I forgot about my storyboarding book. I mean, to bring that in my mind as we were talking about this, but I frequently give a presentation. It's not training so much. It's just a helpful presentation called PowerPoint Audiences Are People Too, Three Steps to More Powerful Slides. And step one of those three steps, mm-hmm. again, is to write your story. My graphic in that part of the presentation is literally using a pencil and a piece of paper, because I think the science is telling us that when your hand is writing, you're being more creative, you're using different parts of your brain. And so I encourage that. In the 21st century, I think that becomes more and more difficult for people to employ. So I say, okay, at least don't start designing your slides. Don't open PowerPoint. If you have to open PowerPoint, write in the notes of section of the PowerPoint, or take out Word, or take out Notepad. So my excuse, if you want to use that word, for not using slides is that if you've not written your story and your story's not nailed down, what you know about how to build slides in PowerPoint or any tool will limit what you can tell in your story. If you think that you can't make a graphic that of a person standing underneath a tree, then you're not going to tell that part of the story, or you might not tell it well because you think, oh, well, I can't make a slide for that. So I think I don't want to limit said story to what the composer thinks they can and can't do with PowerPoint or any tool.
Glenn, you summarize your process from you, the book.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad you said that too. It sounds like we're all on a very similar page in terms of approaching this whole creative process, which this is an idea of like taking ideas. I like to say turning information into inspiration, working through this whole process. And I'm glad you said that, because as I've been delivering workshops based on the book, back to this whole idea where ideas spring to mind and you wish you'd got them into print too. What I say to people now when I present the process is, I'm sharing with you my creative process. The goal for you after considering this is for you to define your creative process. And all I'm asking you to do is rethink, and it's back to what you exactly said, Sandy, rethink this approach of designing your final deliverable at the start of the process, which is sometimes the biggest inhibitor for people. Stretch this out a little bit in whatever method is comfortable for you and how your brain works, and go for it. So excellent. Thank you for the opportunity to add that one in there too.
Okay. Before we jump to the third section of the book, I'm going to say I had a big hurrah. I mean, literally a section where I was standing up saying, this is it, this is it. And I have always been a strong supporter of slide count is not an important benchmark. Something you talk about, page 99, people, it is eloquently put out there. I think it is a great statement and an acknowledgement that this is the wrong marker for anything to do with the presentation, especially in the era of morph transitions, in the era of creating layouts that are, you can see the story structure in slide sorter view. What do you guys say about that?
Oh, I always say I'm slide number agnostic. but as we've talked about in the past, in remote presenting, I've been encouraging more slides to keep things moving. Glenn, we haven't really talked about remote versus live presenting. Does any of this change or any of the guidance or your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think from the idea about being articulate and concise with our ability to, accomplish the goal of the presentation, I think that transcends medium, honestly. And, there's obviously different nuances, but the principles underlying all of this, I think, are very, very just transcend whatever we're doing it.
Hey, Glenn, you just said nuances. I would say nuances. I just got an email yesterday. No, I actually have a question to go with this. I actually got an email yesterday, and this is an international a group we're working with, and it was to hold on, I got to find this really quick. Oh my goodness, where's the email? It was just wonderful to disconsider.
Interesting. Yeah.
They'd send an invoicing for a large service we're doing and like, please disconsider the I'm like, well,
that sounds made up.
Makes perfect sense, but I've never heard it. Now here's my second question. You use the analogy of stop, drop and roll. I've been thinking about this like for the last 20 minutes. Now you grew up obviously not in the States. Was that a thing when you were growing up? Is it like an international thing?
It's really funny you ask that because I can't remember anymore what things I've learned in 17 years in America and what I didn't know before I came here. But then I've been doing these presentation workshops and I've used that analogy. I've done some with groups in Europe and what I must assume is in America in the 70s, a lot of people were spontaneously combusting, but that didn't happen in Europe for some reason, because people in Europe have never heard that phrase before.
Here's
what's wonderful. As a presenter, yeah. You realize you have the opportunity to kind of affect people's lives. And in some ways, we're not always changing the world. But I think through these workshops I've been doing, I might be saving people's lives in the future because I'm teaching them this phrase kind of by accident, which may and hopefully never happens. But if it did, I would like to think they will remember it.
Okay, Sandy, take us to section three.
Okay. Well, section three, song is about the song process or jam session, as you call it, which is another three-letter acronym. Absolutely love it. Can we talk about those steps? I think we've got jot, articulate, and make your presentation tools.
Yeah. So summed up really simply. So this is the whole genesis of the whole book. The whole idea is think about your words, galvanize those words, make them sound great, and then make your visuals. So it really is words first, visuals second. And that is the really high level step. So yes, jot everything down. This is the empty the pantry phrase area. Articulate, where we're really distilling down the information and organizing it into our, I like what you said, Nolan, with your B3, what was it?
B3E.
You've summed up, the exact principles in that wonderful little phrase. And then finally make the visuals at the end. That's the process that I kind of follow. And within there are 9 steps. And this is where my brain was hurting a little bit in this cabin. And maybe it was because I had like a little Scottish whiskey with me to just aid the creative thinking process. Within there, I have 9 steps. So there's 3 kind of sub steps per process. And those all spell out the word bass drums as the method to provide your presentation with a solid backbeat. So that was just for a little fun on there, but it's the same ideas.
I think you had to work pretty hard about that. That's here. There's 9 elements. I could organize those into 3s, but then I could do 3 3s.
Yeah.
I bet there was 11 folks and you had to get rid of 2 to keep the 3 thing going.
I went for a lot of long walks with myself to think about that. Yes, I did.
Okay. So jam. Great. The brainstorming, articulating, and then storyboarding it. I think we're kind of nearing up the end of our conversation, but I want to throw out another great takeaway. And I will say that, Glenn, you can see here's your book. And I can't throw it on camera, but I've got some highlighted notes throughout it. Another one that I was just flipping through, I think this is common to every script writer, every presentation designer, but you do a great job of colorfully and clearly saying, if it is not needed, don't include it in the presentation, which is a hard message to get through to people. And you do it really well. People, important message in there. I close the book. I can find the page number. It's in the hundreds. Thank you for putting that out there. Just making it a statement.
That is what I'm so glad that you picked up on that too. And it's interesting because I listened to a very confident presenter one time on this kind of this idea that you're talking about. And in 20 minutes had accomplished the goal, had delivered a great series of compelling stories and should have stopped there. But he continued talking for another 40 minutes and you could see the audience attention and then diluted his whole impact. And this phrase flashed through my head, which is this: if he had half the information, he would have made twice the impact. And I think that's a nice phrase to keep in mind for people when they're tempted to chuck more information into their presentation.
So when they are composing, and this is one thing I loved from your book, and you repeated it earlier in our conversation, I just want to bring it up. The quote is, when you write your own material, you can present in your own style. And that ties into one, preparation. If that person had written their own material, they would have been able to deliver in their style, not just deliver off the slide content. Exactly?
Exactly right. I think there's a lot of presenters that look at very confident, kind of swaggery type people and think that's what they need to be like to be successful. And that is a very difficult place, because from a personality point of view, someone who's more reserved is never going to feel comfortable strutting around like a peacock on stage and, you know, being like wild with gestures and everything. But that's what I'm trying to encourage people to be, is you don't need to be anything other than yourself. And one of the things I say to people when they say, what's the kind of key to great presentations? I think there's so many answers to that. But one of the answers is authenticity. Mm-hmm. When you're authentic to yourself and you're telling your story in your own style, that just resonates with people and transcends, you know, any kind of personality kind of, you know, attribute.
it's beautiful. And with that, is there anything that we missed? Is there anything that you'd like to add to complete our conversation?
Well, and Glenn, tell us, like, you're for hire, right?
Yes, I am definitely consulting with people. So yes, people can certainly hit me up, and I'm willing to help them. Yes.
We'll make sure the show notes has contact information, obviously.
And the book, you can get the book Before the Mic at Amazon, right? Is that the only place to get it?
Amazon is the most straightforward place. If people contact me through my website, I do some signed copies with some free bookmarks and things like that too. But Amazon seems to be.
And your website is?
My website is beforethemic.com. Mm-hmm.
Easy enough.
Mic with a C, obviously.
And that's it. Conversation complete. There's so much more to say. Before the Mic is the book. It's not about being a presenter. It's about preparing a presentation for the presenter. There are lots and lots of practical and insightful tips and processes on how to develop a winning presentation. There are also a lot of music analogies. So if you're like me, not a music person, focus on the music or focus on the presentation messaging tips and strategies. They are completely worth it. Thank you, Glenn, for spending time with us and everyone listening. The presentation world, and of course, the presentation podcast here, we are better for having you and your book Before the Mic available to us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute delight.
Well, I'll kick off our pro and tech tips. This one has nothing to do with presenting, unless you think of as DIY as presenting. Do it yourself. My husband and I are the consummate do-it-yourselfers. And winter time is when we're most busy, because we're not in the summer, we're out biking or boating and don't have time for that. Currently, we are renovating a small renovation of our main bath. And you may have seen my pro tip on TV. It's from one of those As Seen on TV ads, but it's called the Saker Contour Gauge. And this tool is for the sole purpose of replicating a corner, a molding edge, something like that, so that you replicate that shape and you trace that onto the board or trim or whatever it is you're cutting, so you get the exact shape. It's a dorky little tool, but the Saker Contour Gauge saved us a lot of recutting this last project.
Well, this tells me more, Sandy, because you always say you're, you know, always renovating, but you're really doing it yourself, right?
We installed the floor the last 2 weekends.
That impresses me. That's that impressed me. I thought you were like, we're always renovating and we hire people, but no, you.
Oh gosh, no, we can afford that because I'm always bored.
Well, I've got another non-presentation thing, but a great book. I just finished Mel Brooks's biography, All About Me. And
oh, what a perfect name.
It is. He is title. Exactly. He is just one of my heroes. Like, and this just goes through his whole life and, you know, each of his movies and his early life. And he's just always been sort of a entertainment and comedic and just general hero of mine. So he's fantastic. He's the kind of person that can make jokes about things that nobody else can.
Right. He's the only one that can say All About Me. We exactly. were just talking about right. how we do not do that in the presentation yeah. world, but Mel Brooks it works can get away with it.
So he's, yeah. So definitely pick it up. It's a fantastic read.
Okay. Mine's a techie thing. If you have an iPhone and you have an iWatch, Apple Watch, this is the new setting I discovered fairly recently. And I think it's just an unbelievable feature because, you know, we're wearing face masks and you can't use, you know, you can't have use the face ID to open your phone. I kind of miss the thumbprint that was on the previous versions of the iPhone, you know, where you could just open it up, unlock it with your thumbprint. Now it wants your face. Well, it can't see your face. If you have I don't know if you guys know this or if you have the setup iPhone and Apple Watch combination, there's a setting under settings, face ID and passcode. You can make it so that if you're wearing your watch, you unlock it, it'll unlock your phone for you because it figures the two of you are together. And so, you know, it doesn't need the face ID. It kind of uses, I've got my watch, so I'll authenticate you. It's been phenomenal over the last few months of just using. So just a little tech tip there. Glenn, give us a pro or tech tip, which could be buy my book because it's phenomenal. You tell us.
Well, I'm tempted to say that because, you know, I would be very self-serving, but I'm going to give another tech tip. So I recently got, my wife bought this for me. I'll hold it up for the camera, a Remarkable tablet. Now, I would say there is zero ROI on this device because it's so expensive and you would have, I mean, you're going to say how many notebooks is this going? You would be into the thousands of notebooks before you would get your money back. So it's not an ROI investment, but for me, with my brainstorming on kind of pen and paper, bringing it into, you know, the modern age, it's a tool that I have been playing around with and I love it. I haven't lost any of my notes. I haven't once had to call my wife and say, can you go get me that notebook and take a photograph of that page when I've been traveling because I wrote something down at the time that was super important and now I needed to think about it. So everything that's jotted down on this Remarkable tablet. And, oh, by the way, I should describe it first if you've not heard of it before. It is basically an electronic paper device and everything you write down, there's a little stylus, you use it like pen and paper, but everything you go on there, it goes loaded up to the cloud and then you can read that. This is the part of it that works. You can read that on any other computer. So often when I'm getting to the stage of writing my script, I've got my notes up on electronically from the device and then doing that. So Remarkable tablets, very expensive, but a good tool for brainstorming in the modern day.
Nice.
It's my favorite. I saw that you had it at Summit and I knew were after my heart. It was, it's an amazing tool. Do you have the Remarkable Pen too?
I do. Yes.
I'm not quite sure it's worth the eraser, you know, for $50 more, but I mean, seriously, it's the one process that I've implemented that I've stayed with for more than a couple of weeks. Meaning yeah. I've tried many note-taking techniques. OneNote, post-it notes, whatever. And this is just an amazing tool. I agree with you 100%. Great.
Excellent. Yeah. Yeah, cool. And I didn't get the previous pen, so I had nothing to compare it to. I just went all in and got the whole thing. Well, my wife did for me. It was a nice gift.
That's what I did too. I just went all in.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services. We're a professional presentation design agency. Check us out at tlccreative.com. If you have a virtual or hybrid event, hey, vxpmeeting.com is our private label, full feature meeting platform for that. And the PowerPoint blog is going strong. And being the start of March, I just started a new series. It's going to run the entire month. I'm very excited about. So if you do PowerPoint and you do gradients, I've got a whole series on them for you.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. That's the website you want to go to, nolanhamescreative.com, where you can get the Better Deck Deck, find out about our trainings and our design, and also download a bunch of goodies and also subscribe and lots of stuff. So that's the one website we're pushing now. NolanHamesCreative.com if you want to learn anything that I yammer on about.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwhiz.biz. Of course, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. And I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and on Twitter as at PPTWhiz.
This is Glenn Gibson, author of the book Before the Mic. And you can find out information about me and my book at beforethemic.com. You can also connect with me on Twitter and LinkedIn at Tartan Glenn with two N's is my LinkedIn and Twitter name. And on Facebook and Instagram, it is at Before the Mic Book is how you'll find me there. So I'd love to connect with you. Feel free to get in touch. That would be wonderful. I'm also a proud member of the board of the Presentation Guild as part of this wonderful presentation community.
Thank you for joining us for another great presentation conversation. Episode show notes are available at the Presentation Podcast website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. Also through the website, contact the show hosts with episode suggestions, questions, or comments. We want other designers to join us, and you can help. Please leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services Incorporated, and new episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month. All around.